I think, therefore I am. You see it everywhere, don't you? It's on t-shirts, coffee mugs.
Inspirational posters and guidance counselor offices.
Yeah, exactly. It is arguably the most famous slogan in the entire history of Western philosophy. And it just sounds so confident, like the ultimate statement of self-assurance.
It really does. But what is totally fascinating and what we're going to uncover in this deep dive is that it actually comes from a place of total sweating bullets desperation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it isn't a victory lap at all. It's more like a survivor crawling out of a plane crash.
That is the perfect image to start with, because today we are unpacking a series of lectures by Dr. Arthur Holmes regarding René Descartes and his really famous work, The Meditations. And the mission here is pretty radical.
Yeah.
We aren't just looking at a guy sitting by a fireplace casually pondering the meaning of life.
No, we are looking at a demolition project.
A demolition project. I love that.
That's exactly what Dr. Holmes explains. Descartes is attempting to doubt absolutely everything. He's taking a sledgehammer to reality, to the past, to his own body, to the entire physical world.
He wants to see if there's anything left standing when the dust settles.
Precisely. He is hunting for the one single thing that is impossible to doubt no matter how hard he tries.
So you listening at home, buckle up. We're going to strip away the entire universe and see what happens. Now, before we get to the really famous quote, Dr. Holmes points out something super important about the structure of Descartes' work.
Right. The structure is key.
Because I think a lot of us assume the Meditations are just, you know, a collection of random essays or diary entries. But that's not the case.
Not at all. Holmes emphasizes that this is a deductive system. It's a strictly linear chain of logic, almost like a really complex geometry proof.
So you can't just skip to chapter 3.
Exactly. Meditation 1 is the doubt, the clearing of the underbrush. That leads directly to Meditation 2, which establishes existence. And that leads to Meditation 3, which tries to prove God exists. And eventually, that gets us back to the physical world.
It's like a suspension bridge. If one link breaks,
the whole thing falls into the ocean.
Wow.
And that is exactly why he has to be so rigorous. If he makes one mistake in Meditation 2, he never gets his body back.
Okay, so let's walk the path. We start in Meditation 1. Descartes has just spent the entire time successfully doubting everything. He creates these wild scenarios like, maybe I'm dreaming.
Or maybe I'm insane.
Right. Or the big one. Maybe an all-powerful evil demon is tricking me.
Yes, the evil deceiver. He creates a scenario where his senses are completely unreliable. Imagine that the sky, the earth, colors, shapes, sounds, everything you perceive are just hallucinations planted in your mind by this demon.
So he's basically floating in a void.
Yes. He has no hands, no eyes, no flesh, no blood, no senses at all.
It's the original Matrix scenario.
Yeah.
He's in the pod, but he doesn't know the pod exists.
That is the exact vibe. He has suspended judgment on every single thing he used to believe. He doesn't have a body. He doesn't have a past. He doesn't have a world. But then in Meditation 2, he hits bedrock.
He realizes there's one activity he cannot doubt away.
And this is the pivot point. The move from dubito to cogito.
Dubito being, I doubt.
Right. Descartes realizes that even if he is being deceived by a demon, he is the one being deceived. Even if he is questioning his existence, he is the one questioning.
Because you can't have a deception without a victim to deceive.
The very act of doubting proves that a doubter exists.
So if I say, I doubt that I exist, I am proving I exist literally just by saying it.
Exactly. It's the ultimate gotcha. You cannot doubt that you are doubting.
And this is where we get the phrase everyone knows, cogito, ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. But Dr. Holmes brings up some really funny parodies of this idea from later philosophers who maybe didn't take it quite as seriously.
He does, yeah. And these parodies actually highlight a pretty common misunderstanding. People tend to think Descartes only meant high-level, abstract intellectual thinking.
Like doing advanced algebra or debating ethics.
Right. But Holmes mentions Jean-Paul Sartre, the existentialist, who mocks this in his book, Nausea. Sartre essentially says, I vomit, therefore I exist.
Which, honestly, I kind of love. Because if you have ever been seasick, and I have definitely been seasick, you do not doubt your existence in that moment.
Oh, absolutely not.
You might wish you didn't exist,
yeah.
But you are very, very painfully aware that you do.
It's a totally visceral proof. And that's the crucial point Holmes is making. When Descartes says thinking, or cogito, he is using a massive definition. It isn't just intellect.
What else does it include?
It includes doubting, perceiving, imagining, affirming, denying, willing, and yes, feeling.
So saying, I feel pain, therefore I exist, is just as valid in this system.
It is entirely valid. It's really about consciousness itself. I am conscious, therefore I exist. Holmes clarifies that Descartes isn't separating the intellect from the emotion or the will here. Any conscious state proves you are there to have it.
There's a technical distinction Holmes makes right around here that I found really helpful, but it's a bit tricky. He talks about the difference between the content of consciousness and the act of consciousness.
Yes, we definitely need to break that down because it's vital for what comes next.
Okay, so how does that work?
Think of it this way. The content is the object of your thought. So the image of a tree, the concept of a triangle, or the sensation of pain. The act is what you are doing with it. You are doubting the tree, understanding the triangle, or feeling the pain.
Okay, so it's the what versus the doing.
Exactly. Descartes argues that while we can totally doubt the content, maybe the tree isn't really there, maybe it's a hologram, we are intuitively aware of the agent performing the act. I am aware that I am doing the doubting.
Can we use an example? Let's say I am terrified of a monster under my bed.
Perfect example. The monster is the content. Now, the monster might not exist. It might be a pile of laundry or just a hallucination. You can doubt the monster.
But the fear.
The act of fearing is undeniable. You cannot doubt that you are currently experiencing fear. And because the act is real, the agent doing the acting, which is you, must be real.
I see. So the monster is fake, but the fear is real.
You got it.
So at this point in the meditations, I know I exist. I'm an agent. I'm a fearer or a thinker. But I'm still kind of stuck, aren't I? I don't know if I have a body. I don't know if the room I'm sitting in is real. I just know there is a me thinking about it.
You are very stuck. He hasn't proved the physical world exists yet. And to explain how we relate to that physical world, if it even is there, Descartes uses a really famous illustration, the piece of wax.
Oh, this is a classic. I remember reading this in college and feeling like my own brain was melting right along with the wax.
It'll do that to you.
So let's set the scene for the listener. He takes a piece of honeycomb wax. He describes it in detail. It's hard. It's cold. It makes a specific sound if you wrap your knuckle on it.
It smells like flowers. It tastes like honey.
Right. It has a very specific set of sensory data points. Mm. If you were a machine measuring it, you'd have a specific readout for hardness, temperature, color, smell.
And then he moves it near the fire?
And everything changes.
Everything. It melts. It gets hot to the touch. So hot you can't even hold it. It becomes liquid. The shape is gone. The size increases as it spreads out. The smell evaporates. The taste disappears.
So here is the question he asks. Is it the same wax?
We would all say yes. But why?
Right. Because every single thing my senses told me about wax A is completely different from wax B. If I was that machine measuring inputs, I'd say they were two completely different objects.
And that is the million-dollar insight. Holmes explains that Descartes is showing us that our grasp of wax or any physical object is not a product of our senses.
Because our senses reported totally different things before and after the melting.
Exactly. Therefore, the idea of wax is a mental concept. It's an intuition of the mind. We don't see the wax with our eyes. We judge it to be wax with our mind.
This leads to what Holmes calls the representational theory of knowledge. And this seems to be where things get really tricky, and maybe where philosophy took a massive wrong turn.
It is certainly where modern philosophy takes a major turn. Descartes is basically admitting that we do not see the world directly. We don't look out our windows and see the street. We see our mind's representation of the street.
It's like we are sitting in a windowless control room watching a live video feed on a monitor. We have direct access to the monitor, which is our mind, but only indirect access to the camera outside.
That's a great analogy. You are watching the screen. Now, usually you assume the screen matches reality, but what if the camera is broken? What if someone hacked the feed?
Right, because you are locked in the control room. You have to infer the existence of the outside world. You have to prove the camera exists. You can't just assume it.
And this leads to what Dr. Holmes calls Descartes' faux pas.
Descartes' faux pas. He mentions William Temple there, right?
Yes. William Temple, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, called it a faux pas, which is a very polite British way of saying a catastrophic mistake.
A catastrophic mistake that trapped philosophy for centuries.
By claiming we only know our own consciousness directly, Descartes essentially locked us inside our own heads. And we've been trying to break out ever since.
Because if you are stuck in the room of your own mind, watching these representations, how do you ever prove that anything else is real?
How do you know I am real and not just a programmed avatar on your screen?
This is solipsism, isn't it?
Ideally, yes. Solipsism is the belief that I and only I exist. Solus meaning alone, ipsi meaning self.
Now, nobody really lives their life as a solipsist, right? It's a dead-end street. If a bus is coming at you, you jump out of the way. You don't stand there pondering if the bus is a mental projection.
Right. Practically speaking, you jump. But logically, starting from exactly where Descartes starts, it is very hard to avoid.
And Holmes takes it even further into something that, frankly, terrified me a little bit. He calls it the solipsism of the present moment.
This is a profound problem, and it's definitely one of the most disturbing parts of the lecture. Descartes proves I exist right now while I'm thinking. But human consciousness is gappy.
Gappy? Like, we sleep, we zone out.
Exactly.
I don't feel like I existed while I was asleep last night. I mean, I assume I did, but I wasn't there to witness it.
And here's the kicker. How do you know you existed yesterday?
Well, I remember it. I remember driving home. I remember eating dinner.
But Holmes points out that memory is just a present representation. You aren't actually in the past. You are having a thought right now in this exact second that claims to be about the past.
And you can't time travel to check if it's accurate.
Exactly.
Whoa. So if I'm locked in the present moment, relying on memories that are really just current electrical impulses in my brain, I can't actually prove I existed 5 minutes ago.
Not with absolute certainty, no. It is entirely possible that you popped into existence 1 second ago, complete with a brain full of false memories of a life you never lived.
That is deeply unsettling. So the me from yesterday is basically a story I'm telling myself right now.
In this framework, yes. And this is what leads later philosophers like David Hume to question personal identity altogether. Is the I that exists now the same I that existed yesterday?
And what does Descartes say to that?
Descartes assumes yes, but without God to guarantee the continuity of time, he actually really struggles to prove it.
Okay, let's step back from the abyss for a second before we both have a full-blown existential crisis.
Good idea.
So Descartes establishes I exist, but then he asks, what am I?
And he answers, I am a thinking thing. In Latin, res cogitans. Res meaning thing or substance, cogitans meaning thinking.
But Dr. Holmes points out that this is where Descartes makes a bit of a leap, doesn't he? He doesn't just say thinking is happening. He assumes this thing is a soul.
He does. And Holmes highlights a major objection from Thomas Hobbes. Hobbes was a contemporary of Descartes, but he was a materialist. He believed only physical matter exists.
Right.
So Hobbes basically says, okay, Descartes, you prove there is thinking. But why does the thing that thinks have to be an immaterial spirit?
Right. Hobbes uses the example of walking. If I say I am walking, I don't assume I am an immaterial walking spirit. I assume I am a body that walks.
Exactly. Hobbes asks, why can't the thinking thing be a body? Why can't the brain be the thinker?
That feels like a very modern objection. That's basically neuroscience 101.
It is remarkably modern. Descartes' defense is that he has an intuitive awareness of the agent, the mind, but he does not have an intuitive awareness of the body.
Because he's still doubting the body exists.
Right. He can't claim he has a brain if he isn't even sure brains exist yet. But Holmes notes that Descartes admits he only has a notion of the soul substance, not a clear and distinct idea.
He's skating on thin ice here. Moving from thinking is happening to I am an immortal soul.
Very thin ice.
So let's look at the scoreboard as we move into meditation three. We have a thinking thing. We have ideas. And we are stuck in this solipsistic box. Meditation three is the escape attempt, right? How does he try to get out of the control room?
He takes inventory. He looks at what is inside his mind to see if anything there points to an outside reality. He basically categorizes his ideas into three types.
Let's run through these, because this is how he tries to build the ladder out of the hole. First, we have fictitious ideas.
These are ideas we invent. Fictions. Holmes uses the example of a furry giraffe with butterfly wings.
Or a dragon made of spaghetti.
Exactly. You put that together yourself. It's voluntary. You can conjure it up and dismiss it. It proves absolutely nothing about the outside world because you made it.
Okay, got it. Second type. Adventitious ideas.
These are the ones that seem to come from outside. They are involuntary. For example, if you walk outside and feel the heat of the sun, you can't just choose not to feel it. Or if you look at a person, you can't just choose to see a giraffe instead.
Nature teaches us these must have an external cause. The heat isn't coming from me, it's hitting me.
That's the assumption. But remember, the evil demon could be faking that heat. So even adventitious ideas aren't absolute proof of the physical world.
Which leaves the third type. Innate ideas.
Ideas that are built into the operating system of the mind itself. Truths of logic, mathematics, and for Descartes, the idea of God.
So he wants to use this innate idea of God to prove God actually exists out there. What's the logic there?
It is essentially a causal argument. He says, I have an idea of an infinite perfect God, but I am a finite imperfect being. I couldn't have invented this infinite idea. I don't have the capacity to generate the concept of infinity.
It's okay.
Therefore, the idea must have been placed in me by something that is actually infinite.
Like a trademark on the soul. The idea of God is the artist's signature.
That is the core of his argument. But Holmes and the expert critics he cites flag a massive problem here. A hidden contradiction that threatens to basically undo the whole project.
I think I see where this is going. Back in Meditation 1, he promised to doubt everything.
Everything, including logic, including math.
But now, in Meditation 3, to prove God, he is using the law of causality, the idea that every effect must have a cause. He is treating that rule like an undeniable fact.
You nailed it. He is using logic to prove God exists so that God can then guarantee that logic is reliable.
That's entirely circular. I know logic works because God says so, and I know God exists because logic says so.
It is famously known as the Cartesian Circle, and Holmes mentions a brilliant book by Etienne Gilson called The Influence of Medieval Philosophy on René Descartes.
What's Gilson's take on it?
Gilson argues that despite Descartes trying to restart philosophy from scratch, he was actually smuggling in all this medieval baggage. He didn't doubt the law of causality because he was so steeped in scholastic philosophy, he didn't even realize it was something that could be doubted.
It just goes to show, you can't really have presuppositionless thinking. You can't actually step outside your own culture and language completely.
You really can't. As Holmes puts it so well, if your ideas are unconscious, they aren't yours. They have you. Descartes thought he was nakedly examining the absolute truth, but he was wearing the spectacles of the Middle Ages the whole time.
So let's wrap this up. We've gone through the first three meditations. We've established the absolute certainty of self, I think, but the cost was huge. We are locked in a room of representations, looking at monitors, totally unsure if the world behind them is real.
And to fix that, Descartes brings in God. He needs God to be the bridge.
Right.
If a perfect God exists, he wouldn't be a deceiver. He wouldn't give us cognitive faculties that constantly lie to us, so God becomes the absolute guarantee that allows science and reason to work.
It's so fascinating that the father of modern rationalism and science needed theology to make his entire system functional.
He really did. Without that divine guarantee, he is stuck in the solipsism of the present moment forever. He never gets his body back. He never gets the world back. He's just a lonely mind floating in a void of possible deception.
Which brings us to our final thought. I want to leave you, the listener, with that problem of the solipsism of the present moment that Dr. Holmes described.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's one thing to hear it as an abstract theory, but try to really feel it.
It is a genuinely disturbing thought experiment.
You remember hitting play on this deep dive about 15 minutes ago. You have a memory of the beginning of this conversation. But as we learned today, that memory is just an electrical pattern firing in your brain right now.
And you cannot step outside of the present moment to verify it.
So, using only your own mind, no assumptions allowed, can you actually prove that the you who hit play is the same you listening right now? Or did you just pop into existence this very second, complete with false memories of a deep dive you never actually started?
I think, therefore, I might be completely new.
Something to think about. Thanks for diving deep with us.
See you next time.